Hey, welcome back, everybody, or good morning for those who are just checking in. This is Gardening Naturally on a lovely day. Oh, folks, such a pretty day out there. Get outside, even if you do nothing but just step outside and enjoy it, because this is rare weather for Texas. You know, we need to enjoy every single moment of it that we can. We know what the freeze-pocalypse, we didn't go out and enjoy it, and we've all had the summer of pain where we know what can happen when it gets to be August and no one wants to go outside. So this is lovely weather. Take advantage of it. Let's go to the phone. This is Bonnie. Good morning, Bonnie. What can I help you with?
Good morning. Thank you for all the good advice and the great program. We're enjoying it very much.
Good, good, good. Well, what can I help you with today?
I put in a rosemary plant maybe a month or two ago, and it's growing, but it's not turning green. It was green when I purchased it, but since then I'm lacking something in my soil. I was wondering if you had any advice about what I should put on there. I don't know that it needs fertilizer, but obviously it needs something. So I was wondering what you would recommend to help it turn green and not be...
I don't understand. What color is it?
Well, it's green at the area on the leaf closest to the stem. But then as you go out a little bit, then it's more yellow. And it's not so... It's a little spotted, and it's not so green. It's not uniformly green. So I don't know, should I fertilize this rosemary plant, or what should I do?
How often are you watering it?
I water it every day, just a little bit. Because if
you are causing the problem.
If I don't water it, it looks more yellow.
Excuse me?
And I don't water it much. I water it maybe one cup of water. That's it.
It's not the quantity. Rosemary is not a constantly wet soil plant. So it needs to go from I'm going to water it because it needs it, to a full dry cycle. It is a Mediterranean plant. In most cases, we could throw a rosemary out the window as we're driving down the road and it will land in the ditch and it will grow without our help. You are being too nice to this plant. A proper water cycle would be a good slow soaking of the soil and then letting it go almost completely dry. That is not a plant that wants a constantly wet root system.
I've grown rosemary in the past successfully, and I have other rosemary plants, and they've done okay. This is in a new location where it does get... I mean, the other plants got sun as well. One location didn't get as much. But I don't water them once they get established. But since this was a new plant, then I was watering it some. But like I said, if I don't give it any water, then it looks worse is my only problem. But I could try it. What you suggest, go ahead and don't water it. For how long would you suggest? Because it does get a little bit of sun there. And we've had extreme heat, you know, for the past month.
And we don't now. And that's one of the things that's going to cause some problems with our plants. Because when they get very hot and we give them water and they take up the water they need and suddenly the temperatures drop off and cool off, they literally have way too much water in the plant. There is a neat little thing called guttation, where basically the plant sweats out the water. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get to that point with the rosemary. Because the temperatures have suddenly changed, you want to go to a wet to very dry cycle. And you are going to have to kind of wean it off of the water for a bit. I'm like you. I have established rosemary. I don't water them. I have rosemary that is volunteered in places, and it's annoying as can be because I don't want it there. I got to get it out of there. But you shouldn't have to babysit that plant. Even a new start as much as you are, and because we're getting the cooler temperatures now, there's going to be a much lower demand for water for it. So start backing off on the water, and it will take some time, but it should recover and it should green back up. I don't think there'd be any harm at all with a light fertilization, a little bit of nitrogen. Gosh, even just this morning's coffee grounds sprinkled on the surface of the pot should be more than sufficient in terms of a fertilizer for the plant. But you're really pushing the water cycle on it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. With in reference to the other lady who called about the ants in her plants, then I was glad to hear your suggestion about putting the screen there in the bottom of the pot to, in order to keep the ants out. But when I had some, I was trying to create compost, and so I had coffee grounds in there. And I found out that even if I don't have anything else, it's just coffee grounds, ants love coffee grounds. So I don't know if she ever uses coffee grounds in her soil at all or anything like that, but at least from my experiences, it's always made the ant problem worse. But anyway, maybe other people haven't noticed that with coffee grounds that I have here.
Well, remember, ants want to live in nice places just like people. So the better the soil, regardless of what's in it, the more likely the ants are going to come by, because it's easy for them to make their tunnels, move their stuff, get their food, et cetera, et cetera. So good soils can bring in ants, and that's just what we deal with here in Central Texas. Hopefully it's not fire ants, but that happens too. Bonnie, thank you much for the phone call. Let's see here. We've got time. Bob, good morning. What can I help you with?
Yeah, hi, Jeff. I've got about 15 blackberry plants growing along a chain link fence. And they're, you know, the vines are crawling up just fine. And what I intend is to use that as a natural living fence. But I know that with blackberries, you're supposed to cut the branches when they get a year old. What would happen? But I would like to have the leaves cover the whole fence. In addition to getting blackberries, so what would happen if I just let them just keep growing and not trim them back at all?
First off, they won't produce quite as well. There's absolutely nothing wrong doing what you are suggesting here. Let's just let them go wild. You won't get quite the production. Number two, when you have that cane that has had fruit on it and you pick all the fruit off, that cane becomes a vector for disease. It's going to die. Not going to look very good, by the way. But it's also going to be a way where you could get diseases that can affect the blackberries. Will it kill the blackberries? Can, but mostly it'll affect the production again. So if you pick the last berry off of that cane, cut that cane. That's the extent of maintenance that you really have to do there. If you don't want to do that at all, blackberries are hardy enough that you're going to have the fence you're asking for, and it should look pretty reasonable. It's just that you may not get the production of berries that you may have wanted. So you can do what you're suggesting, but if you're looking, if berries are the priority, you want to cut those canes down after you've picked the last piece of fruit. Bob, we're up against a break right now. Thank you much for the call, folks. This is Gardening Naturally. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. What a lovely day. I know. I'm probably driving everybody crazy because they tune in. They go, Jeff, just keep saying it's a lovely day. It's a lovely day. Take advantage of it, folks. We need a break, you know, and nothing is really better for us to get that nice breeze, a little sun on our face, take a nice little walk, clear your head, and then sit down in front of the TV and watch the football game. I guess there's a football game today. Somebody's playing somebody else. One of the things that we can be doing right now is it is not a bad time to do the turf fertilizing. It's a great, great time to be putting down the corn gluten. That can act as your fertilizer. So take advantage of that. And it's lower on the labor. That's a good one. That helps a lot. Let's go to the phone. This is Marshall. Good morning, Marshall. What can I help you with?
Yes, Jeff. Thanks for helping me out here. In the past, you've mentioned crepe myrtles getting a second bloom. And I know it's late for me this year, but I do not think I've ever had a second bloom on any of my crepe myrtles. And is there something I can add to the soil or whatever to help this happen to me?
Not necessarily. And I'm sorry, I probably made that part confusing. I have a variety of crepe myrtle that does a second bloom. Can I tell you honestly that every single crepe myrtle will bloom twice? I'm not sure. I have white and purple, two of the old varieties, 30-footers, and they will bloom a second time randomly, and it really depends on getting the weather right, the rain, temperatures, all those kind of things. And you may see some success if you get the rain this week. And if we get the slightly more moderate temperatures, there may be a possibility that your crepe myrtles will go, hey, this is still good weather, I'm going to put on a second bloom. Now, I have a pair that bloom, they're the, I guess you'd call them melon color, that are always in bloom on the 4th of July. This is more reliable than any clock that I own. And 8 out of 10 times, they'll give me a second bloom. And not a bad second bloom. It's not like, oh my gosh, it's better than the first one. But I do remember times when the weather conditions or something prevented them from doing it again. So I don't know that every single variety of crepe myrtle will by default double bloom during the year. I believe they have the opportunity to do so if the conditions are met. And I think you may be able to get a late bloom out of them. If we can get the rain this week, because the temperatures will be moderate, the weather conditions would be so good for it. Having the rain, they're talking about roughly an inch of rain in the area over 7 days. I think that may trigger them for you. Can you help them out at all? Yeah, a light, a dry fertilizer. You could go out and spread it today if you wanted to. Remember, single digit numbers, the three digits, the three numbers on the bag, single digits would be fine. They don't have, none of the numbers have to be super duper high. And you may give them just a little bit of juice there like that and hope that temperature and rain come together to give you a second bloom. But I'm sorry, I myself may have been confused assuming that any crepe myrtle can double bloom. I'm going to have to look that up and make sure that that's not that's actually something that can happen, that there aren't varieties that go, nope, you only get one shot at me and that's it. Because there are flowers that do that, one time bloom and we're done. I don't think crepe myrtles are like that. I think all of them can do a second bloom. You just got to give them what they need to do so.
Flower power. I'm not sure the numbers. Is that a good one to use?
That's an excellent.
Okay.
That's an excellent fertilizer. I've got a big bag of it here at my home, and I use it on pretty much all of my veggies. I use it on my roses. I get really good results from that. I even use it on my mist flower, my Greg's Blue Mist flower, just to help try to get more blooms out there for the butterflies. I really like that fertilizer because it won't harm the plants. You can barehand it. Yeah, it's a good choice.
Now, would that, on the back of the crepe myrtles again, would that help the, I know a lot, I've seen a lot of crepe myrtles in the area. With the, it seems like the blooms last a lot longer than what ours do. And would that seem to help that situation for me?
Maybe. Sometimes the length of the bloom, the length of time that the bloom is blooming, is dependent on the size of the bloom. So if the plant's healthy and you gave it a little help for when it decided to start to bloom, it may put on a larger bloom for you, which by default should last longer. So there'd be no harm in using this, say, 6 to 8 weeks before you would expect it to bloom. Give it that energy, get it ready to go, and when it does decide to come out and bloom, it would make sure that it had everything it needed to really put on a show for you.
All right, Jeff. And listen, appreciate your time. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Marshall. You too. Scott, I see you there. We're coming down to the bottom of the hour. I got a break for the news. Can you hang on? I'll catch you on the other side of this. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. You can give me a call. The number's 512-836-0590. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone. Scott, thanks for hanging on. What can I help you with?
Hey, I have three different varieties of lavender, Grosso, Phenomenal, and Provence. I have them in pots. Will they be okay over the winter if we have a, you know, halfway normal winter? Or should I bring
kind
of protect them?
I lost a Provence over the freeze-pocalypse, but if it had been a normal winter, I wouldn't have. I had it in like a 30-gallon container too, and it had pony foot growing on top of the soil. So, I mean, it had some protection, and that mass of dirt, it shouldn't have froze. Ah, yeah, it did, and it just wiped it out. But if it had been a normal winter, yeah, I think it would have been fine. There's a lot of varieties that should do surprisingly well around here. I mean, Fredericksburg has their big lavender festival. I think you will be okay with those varieties. But of course, Scott, you know, it doesn't kill you to go, hey, it may get cold. I'm going to at least throw a piece of frost cloth over them. But they should make them through what we would might consider a normal winter around here.
Okay. And beauty berry, I have a bunch that I grew from seed, and I'm lazy and haven't planted them yet. Would it be okay to plant them and let the roots start growing, and would they survive till next year come back, or do they just reseed?
No, they will, they're a perennial, and okay. Each season they will get bigger and bigger. I've got one where I've got to the point now where we do have to trim it, at some point. It gets bigger than we want, and it handles that fine. You got to catch 22 here, Scott. If you already have them in containers, they're going to drop their leaves anyway. They're going to be deciduous. But it might be a whole lot easier to keep them protected if we get cold in those containers rather than kind of leaving them to their own in the soil. I think you'll be fine, especially if you've got plants that are, 6 to 12 inches tall. If they're looking pretty healthy, I think you could put them in the ground. But remember, in the next, if it's even 6 weeks, they'll drop all their leaves. They'll look like they're just a stick in the ground. But come spring, they should start leafing out again for you, and you'll know which ones made it and didn't.
Okay, and how much sun on those?
You know, there is a
Right now I have
Lowe's
them
parking. Great. Normally they're a shade plant. You know, some dappled light is fine. They could probably do fine with morning sun, afternoon shade. But there, for years, was this really big American beautyberry in the center of the Lowe's parking lot in Hutto. And I mean, out in the center of the parking lot, in the hottest spot it could be, looked fine to me. So they handle the shade wonderfully, but I think they can take a surprising amount of sun. So somewhere in between there, and they should be fine.
Okay, and I have one more. We got a Fuyu persimmon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first year we planted it. I know the whole sleep, creep, leap thing, but are those things slow
yeah.
growers?
Generally not.
Okay.
Persimmon is one where you might get actual fruit for it on like year three, as opposed to waiting out to most fruit trees to year five. They want, you know, good growing conditions like anybody else. They're a full sun plant. They can be a beautiful landscape tree. But yes, you're right. They're going to take their time to set those roots that first year.
Okay.
After that, compost, fertilizer occasionally, and you should see them start to pick up quickly.
All right. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Scott. Yeah, I have a persimmon, and I've had that issue with it, too. I've had several persimmons. And the second year in the ground, it actually tried hard to put on fruit. I was happy with it. I didn't get the fruit. It didn't actually set it. But they can produce early or take their time. Well cared for. They're a beautiful plant, folks. They the leaves turn a color of burnt orange that's just gorgeous in the fall. I mean, it really adds to the landscape. And they can be a relatively big tree. You know, a 20-footer may not be unusual. So they're an add. Oh, and, you know, I'm sitting here talking about a persimmon. That is the Japanese persimmon, the Fuyu, that produces the big orange fruit that cost a ton in the grocery store, and you can just go out and pick them yourself. But there's a Texas persimmon. There's a native tree, and it's a great tree, about a 15-footer, super tough. Man, once it's established, you pretty much can just leave it be. It produces, if you get one that does produce, there's male and female, it produces a black fruit, half the size of a golf ball, maybe a little smaller than that, that wildlife love. They'll stain. You can eat them, but they're black and they will stain. You'll have this really weird looking dentistry after you eat them. But they do great here in Texas. They are wonderful, wonderful trees. If you can find one, and you should be able to get them easily from a local independent nursery, they look great. They do wonderful in the landscape, and the blooms, when they bloom, smell fantastic. So make sure you know which kind of persimmon we're talking about. And don't be afraid to put in the native persimmon as a good choice for a tree. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. We're up against our last break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone while we're in the lightning round here. And this is Christine. Good morning, Christine. What can I help you with?
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I have a question for you from a friend in El Paso, Texas. Unfortunately, they don't have a great show like you, like we do in Austin. She collects rainwater in empty milk jugs, and she said it's forming that green, like a greenish stuff at the bottom, and she wanted to know if she can still water her plants, and and would it not harm her plants?
She can still use that on the ground. On the plants, I would not use it, obviously, for drinking water without cleaning it. And the reason it's getting the green stuff is she needs to keep it in a bucket that doesn't let any light through. So if she's got it in a big jug, which is a fine way to collect rainwater, what happens is light can shine on that water, and as it falls through the air, it gets algae and mold and all kinds of nasty stuff that's in the air in it. So that sunlight makes that green stuff grow. So if she painted the jugs, washed them really good and painted them, she wouldn't get that as much. It doesn't care what color it is, just so sunlight can't get in there. But yes, she can use that throughout her garden, even with the green stuff.
Okay, great. One, another question. I have some fish oil that I purchased about 3 years ago, and it smells twice as bad. Color change. Should I toss it?
Here's the thing, Christine. When you say it smells bad, does it smell like vinegar, or does it smell like bad beer, you know, like alcohol?
Well, let's see. I have it right here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't want you to have to snort it or something. But if it smells like vinegar, if it has a real vinegar smell to it, or it has a real, like, brewed skunk beer smell to it, I might just pour it on my compost pile. But if it doesn't, if it still smells like stinky fish, it should be okay to use. Just remember, dilute it like it says on the bottle, but I think it would still be okay to use. When you get the vinegar smell or you get the beer smell, that means it's basically rotting. It's fermenting in that jug, and that's not normally what you want it to do.
I just got a whiff of it, and it smells like ammonia, a little bit of ammonia. Same thing, right?
Yeah, I think I might mix up a couple, a five-gallon bucket of water and pour that stuff in there and then dump that on, like, my compost pile or something. That way, it will still break down. The compost will take care of it. It'll help the compost out. But I don't know if I would keep using that on my plants.
Okay, one more question. I told you a screener I had two, but I have another one. I wanted to know if birds can see, because I have one that hangs around my car mirror, on my mirror, driver's side, and he seems to get excited. Are they able to see themselves in the mirror? He's always hanging around
there. Yes, they are. Cardinals are notorious for this. And what they do is they see themselves in the mirror and they think it's a rival. So they will attack the mirror thinking they're attacking somebody who's trying to, you know, take over their territory or their bird or their food or whatever. That's not at all uncommon. They shouldn't hurt the car, and it really shouldn't hurt the bird. But, yeah, you see that a lot on rearview mirrors are always the one where the bird will sit there and stare at himself and peck at it, things like that. And you can see it in reflections in certain windows. You may have a bird attacking a window. That's what's going on. They think they see a rival reflection. They aren't smart enough to know it's them they're seeing, and that puts them in a defensive mode. It's okay. It happens. I don't like it when they're pounding on my window at 4 a.m, but they're not going to hurt the car, and the bird's not going to hurt itself.
Well, thank you. I learned a lot this morning.
Oh, thank you for the call, Christine. Yeah, folks, this is not uncommon. And people kind of go, well, how do I get this bird to stop pounding on the window? Look, it's really simple. Find a picture of an owl, and it doesn't have to be very big. It doesn't even have to be in color. Find a picture of an owl or a hawk or a bird other than the cardinal that's attacking the window or whatever bird it is. Print it out, cut it out, and tape it to the inside of the window. That way, when the bird looks, he's going to see that other bird, not himself. And that should get him to stop pounding on your windows and see if that doesn't give you some peace. Let's go to the phone. This is Sam. Good morning, Sam. What can I help you with?
Oh, hello, Winston. Thank you for taking my call, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
I have a couple of questions. One is, what would you recommend as a lawn fertilizer? Is it the right time now to do it?
Yes, it is the right time to do it. I like dry fertilizers. Not that you can't use a liquid, but I think dry fertilizers are simple, slow release. And there are several good ones out there. There's the 824. Medina makes one called Growing Green. There's the Nature's Creation 612. All of those are great turf fertilizers. And you could use them now. This is not a bad time of the year at all to be using them. So if you want, you can go to your local independent nursery. And many of those fertilizers you may find even in a big box store. But you don't need to bury the turf in a ton of nitrogen. A little food now lets them grow good, solid roots over the winter period of time, meaning you'll have a good dense turf show up in the spring. It'll be pretty and green for you. And now's a great time to be doing that fertilizing. Folks, this has been Gardening Naturally. Go outside. I know I said it 100 times today. Go outside, enjoy the day. It's going to be a nice day. We got better days coming yet. I will talk to everybody tomorrow at 8. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.